enjoyment that can come from rebelling, from being a rebel, is to know that you're disobeying some command, to know that you're going against something, you're going against the status quo or the norm or some law, then you are delighted. There is a sense of delight then. I'm thinking of the hippies in the 60s. They came out of the establishment. Their parents were establishment people, and so they rebelled against the establishment. It only has meaning, this rebellion, if you have something to rebel from. Hello everyone, Martin Zunder here. And so my thought to you today is what is Satan rebelling from? What is he rebelling from? We say he's not rebelling from anything. He was created to oppose God. That's true. And yet, how is it that he recognizes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Remember, he said that. You're the Son of God, cast yourself down. You're this, you're that, you're this, you're that. Satan knows more about Christ than Christians do. He gives him more credit than Christians. Satan knew that he was the God of the air, that he had been given jurisdiction over the earth, and he then offered it to Christ. Satan knew it was given him, this jurisdiction. Christians think that he has it by default. Satan does. That there's these two gods battling for power in the universe. The good God and the bad God. Satan's the bad God. They actually think he's a god. So my suggestion to you, and I'm going to use Paul as an example here, or Saul, before he became Paul, is that what if Satan has something inside of him that eventually responds, because something is going to respond, something in him, listen to me, something in Satan is going to respond to the truth of what he is and how he got there, when he is standing before the judgment of God. Now, he's going into the lake of fire for the eons of the eons. Yeah, but what happens to him after that? That's my question, always is, what happens next? So Satan comes out of the lake of fire. But he's judged. He learns something. How does he learn anything if he's incorrigible? What was that one Von Trapp kid? He marches in front of Maria and says, "I'm incorrigible." I used to thought he said he was incorrigible. In other words, he was able to be encouraged. No, but he was incorrigible. He could not be reformed. but it turned out that Maria did reform him, and all it took was cutting up some drapery, and making a nice little pantsuit for the kid. It inspired him to climb trees and act like a monkey. Fantastic reformation there. So I propose to you that Satan, there's going to be something in him that recognizes the truth. Well, he already does recognize the truth. He just doesn't submit himself to God. Satan recognizes more of the truth again than most Christians do. They know, he knows he's the Son of God. He calls him the Son of God somewhere. I don't know where. I read it somewhere in the Bible. Christians think that Christ is God. So Satan's smarter than Christians. There's something in this being that is going to be tapped, that is so deep down in him now, that it's only going to be tapped by a couple eons in the lake of fire should do it. A couple eons of conscious torment in the lake of fire. Human beings are not consciously tormented in the lake of fire, and don't let me hear any of you saying that they are. For human beings, lake of fire is the second death. Satan, however, and the beast and the beast and the false prophet are tormented alive. But after that, something's going to kick in. Yeah, what is that something? Something is going to kick in. How can something kick in that's not there? So just as I was saying about my friend's father yesterday, I said deep down, this guy is a victim of his environment. And, deeper down than that, he's a creation of God and God loves him. So there's a good person down there underneath. I think that's my problem in life. Do you want to hear what my problem in life is? One of them. This is going to sound really like I'm puffing myself up, but it's just a fact that even evil people, I'm able to see deep down their inherent goodness. It's why I can't abandon people, period. And I also cannot abandon the human race, period. I cannot abandon the human race because even the most ignoble of humans, I see the hand of God somewhere there. Try to picture them as babies or whatever. At one point, this person was a baby. Did you know that Hitler was once a baby? Heil Hitler. Okay, Hitler was a baby. So you can feel some kind of sympathy. Rolling Stones, sympathy for the devil. This is what I'm telling you. I feel sympathy for the devil. Now, my template for this is the Apostle Paul, who was Saul. This man was brutalizing the ecclesia, hated Jesus Christ, and yet when Jesus Christ apprehended him on the road to Damascus, he said, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads." The goads, kick against the goads. Goad, in the Greek, you look at that Greek word, it's a sharpened stick. That's what it means. And so Paul was kicking against some kind of sharpened stick. As when he was Saul, what was it? Why was the man? The man was the greatest achievement of Pharisaical wonderhood. And he was also a moron. He was a jerk. Class A jerk because he was so proud. He was self-righteous. But something, the reason he was miserable as a human being was because he was rebelling against something. Like those people in the 60s. You have to rebel against something. And maybe he felt some kind of twinge of joy in his rebellion, but on the other hand, you know that something you're doing is wrong. That was the goad. And Christ brought this out to him on the road to Damascus. You've been kicking against the goats. Now let me ask you this. How long did it take Saul, the Pharisee, to be reformed? Did he go to reform school? Did he go to the Damascus Reformatory? Did Jesus Christ take him through a 12-step program, 7-week program? No, it was instantaneous. He goes, "Yeah, okay, got it." How could he get it so quick? Because it was already incubating inside of him. Okay, now we're talking about Satan. Worst case scenario, I would say. Worse than Saul, even. So for him, the road to Damascus is now expanded to Satan's 2 eons in the lake of fire. That's how bad this dude is. Sorry, it's not a dude, it's a spiritual being. I'm not going to say anything bad about Satan. So, what's he responding to? What is it inside of him that's reacting to the lake of fire? And does he have a right to call himself a victim when he has learned his lesson? How does he learn again if he doesn't have something inside of him to respond to God's love when finally manifested to him? And so he's rejoicing in God when he's finally brought into this reconciliation that I read to you yesterday from Colossians chapter 1. And so he's not going to see himself as a victim any longer. He's going to see himself as a beneficiary. And we're all, in the absolute viewpoint, beneficiaries of God's plans for our lives. God's plans for our lives at the time are hard. And so we're victims now. We think we're victims. So let's go back to this goad thing. You know, here's Saul all the time. He's like resisting this goad. Picture this, a sharp stick. Picture like you get a cow in line with a goad. But you don't need it for most of the cows. They go along with you. You know, you herd them in and they're going along. But there's always one troublemaker. He's over here rebelling. And he's probably, you know, in the back 40 smoking weed. And he's probably got a American flag bandana tied around his forehead, his huge little cow, his huge big cow forehead. He's a tough guy and he's not going to go along with the crowd and he's rebelling, but he's got an instinct and he knows that he's supposed to go with the rest of those cows, but he doesn't, you know, because he's a rebel. He's smoking a cigarette, got his bandana, he's got his leather jacket, but all it takes is that prod, that sharpened stick, the goad, to oom, and then he's back in line. He's back in line. This goad can come in many shapes and forms in our life. We go through trials, we get sick, we lose a loved one, some terrible thing happens, and it makes us reassess everything. Oh, Saul had his goad on the road to the, well, he had his goad all his career as a Pharisee, and this was brought home to him through the trial of getting blinded, knocked to the ground. Pretty good technique there, I would say. So I told my friend, I said, look, compare it to the cross. I said, and you've heard me use this example before. She hadn't heard it, I don't think, but the ultimate victim, Jesus Christ, I mean, you would think, I mean, look, he's everything about the trial was illegal. He was railroaded. They ask the population, release for us Jesus or Barabbas. And they said, release Barabbas and crucify Jesus. So, again, bad decision. So he was a victim. And who standing at the cross really could help but see it otherwise, including his mother, who was looking up at her naked son nailed to the stake and like, oh, this is terrible. And yet there's your salvation. There's your salvation of the world right there. There it is. So how much of a victim was he? Is he a victim? Yes and no. Yes and no. He's a victim. Yes. He's getting screwed by the system. You can say he's getting screwed by God, but no, because he is now raised higher than he was before. More power, more honor, more glory because of the things he suffered, because of his trials. So change the viewpoint. And my friend softened at this, and she understood the point. Not sure she's at the place yet where she could say, yeah, my dad's a victim. But in a sense, again, he is. In a sense, Jesus Christ was a victim. And in a sense, Satan is a victim. But I am not. This is where you need to resist the temptation of using victimhood. I'm going to discuss this in detail in a couple shows. Going to really explore this idea of victimhood here. Haven't got to that verse in Paul. There's a place in Paul, Romans 7, that will excuse you for every bad thing you ever did. Remember Steve Martin? Well, excuse me. Well, you're going to be excused for everything you've ever done here. By something Paul says in Romans chapter 7. But by the same token, I'm also going to put you on the block and hold you accountable for things you do in your life. How can you do both things, Martin? I can do it because it's the difference between, again, I keep bringing this up, it's important, the absolute and the relative viewpoint. Relatively, we're all victims. Absolutely, we're beneficiaries. But since we think from God's point of view, I'd like us to, more and more, we think of ourselves as beneficiaries. It's true, we're objects of discipline. But I can say that even of this girl's father, he's object of discipline as well. You might say he's now a Saul. Who knows that tomorrow's going to be the day he comes around. And we're all going to look back at the terrible time when he was abusing his wife. And we're going to see, oh, how necessary that was. And how essential it was to his development, to his ultimate realization of how things had gone bad. And how he got to where he is now to appreciate and realize the grace of God. And now he becomes like the Grinch, 10 times of a better person than he was before. The Grinch, another great example. I've run the Grinch for you before. Don't want to belabor the old Grinchmeister there. But this is God's modus operandi the whole way through. And so using Saul as a template, I can say, I think with confidence, that there is something inside Satan deep, deep down that will respond to the love of God when all those layers above that essential thing are burned off. And there's a lot of layers there for Satan. Thus, the lake of fire for the eons of the eons. the fire in this case, not in the case of human beings tossed there, because they're killed. Human beings are killed by fire and sulfur. But sulfur is a purifying agent, and fire restores things to their essential elements. People are always using this argument about fire with me, with human beings thrown in the lake of fire, but it's clearly said to be death for human beings. For Satan, however, it is going to purify. It is going to strip layer after layer after layer after layer until the essential core is reached, and that essential core can be touched and will be touched by the love of God.